trying to get my slides off of here.
I might touch it again.
Okay. Thank you. My talk is different. We're talking about, and I'm changing subjects quite a bit, in fact. Yes, thank you. My name is Max Bonilla.
Did you get you a microphone?
Oh.
No, it's for the recording, that's on the desk.
Is it on? Presumably.
Okay, we'll assume
okay.
It's still on.
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't come to us, it just goes to the recording.
Right, I just have to speak up. All right, my name is Max Bonilla. I'm the Vice President for International Relations at a university in Madrid, Spain, Francisco de Vitoria, where we have been trying to deal with a question that is clearly to me very much present among members of the American Scientific Affiliation and is also present to many Christian and Catholic universities around the country. That is the question of how to integrate faith and reason within the curriculum. Now, the way that I like to define the problem so that we understand what that means, when we talk about the integration of faith and reason, or as it is done by many of the members of the association recently, the integration of faith and learning, but in my mind, faith and reason is broader, but includes also, of course, the question of learning. Or as someone has described it, the integration of the Christian intellectual tradition, which to me is narrower and slightly different. When I speak about the integration of faith and reason, I refer to the question of how one understands a particular field of knowledge, not just scientific in our case, but from my perspective as a university, any field that is taught at a university, with the question of faith in a way that is legitimate and acceptable both to the science as well as to the faith question. So, for example, when people try to integrate engineering and faith, sometimes, as someone said to me earlier, by the way, how much time do I have? 20 minutes? How long do I have?
You have 30 minutes.
30 minutes?
Yes, I'll give you 3 minutes warning.
Okay.
And then we will have 5 minutes for questions, so you actually have 22 minutes.
Okay, 22 minutes. 22 will be just enough. So, when we talk about engineering, for example, and how to integrate faith and reason within engineering, and oftentimes what people do is say, well, we'll go and build a water purification plant in Africa for the missions. So you're integrating engineering with your faith. That is, to my mind, the application of engineering to the faith, but not an integration of the science. And that's the easy way to do it. I was speaking with a candidate. I was interviewing a candidate for a marketing position several years ago when I was vice president for academic affairs at a university here in the States. And I asked him how he integrated the question of faith and reason within marketing. That is, how is it different to teach at this university compared to a secular university marketing? And he said he was going to simply say that he would begin with prayer in the classroom. And of course I said that is, in effect, meaningless to the question, because the question is asking how do you teach marketing? So it's an internal question to the field, not what you do around it, which is nice if you start with prayer, that's okay, but it's not itself, it doesn't address the question. And our question is that very much within the field. Now, many universities, both Protestant and Catholic, mine is a Catholic university, will answer the question or deal with the question again, from an outside perspective. We will take the curriculum and say we'll have a major in biology or chemistry and require them to have general education requirements or core curriculum requirements that include some theology and philosophy, an introduction to the Bible or something like that. And that will do for that integration, which again is good to have, but it's not, doesn't address the question within the field. So my university about 10 years ago began to ask intensely the question and systematically, how do you actually integrate faith and reason within secular fields? Particularly because a university, it's an apostolate of the church, is an apostolate of the mind. And therefore, it is well and good that you have campus ministry within the campus. That's, you know, and within university life. That's very good. It is very nice that you have a chapel, of course, and that you have some kind of evangelistic work, outreach going on within the university. But it is not the apostolate of the mind when you're just doing it all around. And when you have a core curriculum that involves, at best, 20% of the curriculum, most of the students are majoring in, oftentimes, not in Bible studies or in theology, but in accounting or architecture. And their curriculum is at most 20% that philosophy and theology, and 80% at best, oftentimes more, 90% would be secular fields. Secular fields, of course, meaning non-theology and philosophy, but specifically the field that addresses a major like architecture or economics. How do you then, as a Christian university, distinguish yourself without at the same time becoming distorting the field into a kind of fundamentalist approach in the sense that you throw out much of the science that you don't like and then you impose on it concepts of the Bible that you find more appealing. The big debate that happened years ago here at the SAA is not so much a debate, but the question of evolution, for example, within biology, which is still raging in some areas in the South, in Texas, for example, recently. There's still quite a discussion, mostly not in universities, but in high schools, where the curriculum ought to include creationism, which is a biblical concept, with biology, which is a scientific concept, and the merging of the two, sometimes by just crashing them and seeing which one is left, is to us not a suitable solution. But we work from this intuition, the concept that if we believe that all knowledge ultimately begins and culminates with Christ, then in some way, even if you, and especially, and because you should be rigorous in your academic enterprise, when you pursue an academic effort, project, say, for example, the teaching of chemistry, as a concept, as a part of human knowledge, that knowledge in some way ought to lead to Christ. How does that happen? How can that happen? And how that field contributes to that ultimate sense of the unity of truth, which, like I said, culminates in Christ, without at the same time becoming a distorted aberration of your science. And it's far more complex a question, it seems to us, than it may seem on the surface. A number of people have done some work on that area, and most of the time what we have found is people complaining about the fact that there needs to be more of that integration, and then the solutions are like I just pointed out earlier, by going around it, by applying the science to some Christian ministry, which is nice, but it's not the science itself. Now, here's the reason why we think it's a problem, why we think the problem exists the way it does. When we hire our professors, as I did for a number of years, people that would come with sometimes very fine doctorates from Harvard or Yale or MIT, they are often believing professors. They believe they're Christians, that they truly are committed to the gospel. But they have been trained in university academic programs that are not Christian programs. And they have been taught from an anthropology that is not in accord with Christian belief. By anthropology, I mean the conception of the place of the person within reality. So that is to say, what does it mean to be human in light of human reality? Is that human reality one that recognizes the place of God within a human experience, or is an anthropology that does not recognize the place of God within human reality? And in those universities, as most universities that have strong science programs, where many of our faculty come from that are state or private universities, are not committed Christian universities, that anthropology tends to be sometimes explicitly anti-Christian, and at best neutral to that anthropology. But we'd recognize at the same time that there is no such thing as a neutral anthropology. It's like agnosticism. Agnosticism functions effectively only in theory. You cannot be an agnostic in practice. You act, you may not believe whether God exists, hence you're an agnostic. But you have to act, live your life as if God exists or as if God doesn't exist. But you can't live in between. There's no in between conceptually. This anthropology within which you were trained as a scientist has the same problem. A neutral anthropology assumes that God is or assumes that God isn't. And he sees the person as either a collection of molecules, the result of a random act of chaos, or he sees the human person is created in the image and likeness of God. And therefore, philosophically makes certain assumptions, implicitly or explicitly, most often implicitly, about human reality, and brings those conclusions up to the practice of the science. So the scientist that then is hired by our Christian universities and asked to adhere to either a statement of faith or at least to be faithful to the mission of the university presupposes that they're not going to then be, and that adherence to the faith of the university or to the mission of the university presupposes that the professor will not be teaching things that are contrary to the faith in some way. But the professor oftentimes does not have the background, however expert they may be in chemistry or physics, to be able to distinguish what is theologically or philosophically proper to make as a conclusion. So you end up with strange applications of science or with gaps that you have to fill in somehow. An example is one of our professors in the university I used to work for in the U.S. most recently that would teach chemistry and then would get to the question, the chapter on contraception and abortion, and knowing that the church did not support those, and she herself was a believing Catholic, so she herself accepted those teachings, but couldn't understand them, sufficient for her to be able to explain them as a chemist to the students, would simply say to the students, we'll skip this section in the chapter because we have to use this book, it's very good and includes that section, but I don't want to teach it. Go to the philosophers and the theologians and they'll explain to you why this is a problem. Well, that's not an entirely bad position to have. Is honest enough to say, I don't know. But it doesn't really address the question within the science as to what is anthropologically problematic with this chapter. So Francisco de Vitoria, instead of just satisfying themselves with the idea that those questions are for the philosophers and the theologians, or like some of our friends here at the SAA have told me, They they Christianized their science by doing the ministry things that I referred to earlier in my talk. Francisco de Vitoria, instead of doing that, realized that because the university is an apostolate of the mind, therefore the 80% of the curriculum that is secular ought not be left ignored. And it needs to be challenged to be able to answer. The problem, of course, is that it is the expert in the field that needs to be able to answer what kind of anthropology undergirds that science. But the scientist is often ill-prepared to answer those questions because in our modern approach to science, as pragmatic as we are, we teach people how to do the science but not how to think about how the science came to be. So that becomes a problem because the professors don't have the tools, although they're the ones who are supposed to answer the questions. But what makes a university, at the end of the day, is the way, and what it makes it, what makes the university a Christian university, is primarily the specific way in which we use reason in all facets of our work, and therefore the way we seek truth and love. The search for truth, which is at the heart of a university, is a university, as an academic community that researches and teaches. That search for truth must be then recognized. That search for truth must recognize at the same time that the search for truth is a search for ultimate truth. And if ultimate truth is Christ and God, then all aspects, even accounting, ought to have a question, an answer in that area. I'll give you a brief example. When I was interviewing a professor once for marketing, I said, "What is the difference between marketing here and marketing in another school?" The ultimate in the answer is not the. I mean, marketing. What you're looking for is to buy things, right? You're teaching someone. You're convincing someone that you need to buy a new car, that you need to go on vacation, and that will make you happy. And it's always a quest for happiness. If you buy the next car, you will be happy, is the undertext, the subtext. The Christian recognizes that happiness is not for this world. Now, you still have to get a job and sell. But that sales job must be done from an understanding that is deeper than just happiness is for here. So, a friend of mine used to work, at a marketing company in New York. And they got the contract for the U.S. Army. This is a true story. When they had the marketing campaign done, they ended up with this, an Army, be all that you can be. You remember that one? It's no longer been used, but it was very effective. And the point that they made was, we want to do marketing in a way that shows the person, points the person towards a higher goal. So, be all that you can be was not intended to be the best soldier you could be. It was more than that. It was esprit de corps. It was discipline. It was honor. It was love of country. It was leaving the army, prepared to be the best person you could be. And as this group, as a company was, as a group of Catholics that were intensely interested in being faithful to Christ, and that to them seemed like a great idea, which to me sounds like a great idea still. The company, the marketing campaign ran its course, as they often do, and the Army went and hired another marketing company that came out with a new slogan, an army of one, which, if you think about it, is pretty much the opposite of what be all that you can be would be, because what it was intended to do, what it intends to do, is aimed at, it wasn't very effective, and then the campaign was abandoned. But it's a Rambo mentality aimed at the video gamers. But it's not fulfilling. It's not, doesn't push you to higher goal. So Francisco de Victoria is taking that question and are trying to apply it like these people did with marketing into every field of knowledge. And to do that, they've created a series of committees, and they've had the university, the departments meet to discuss a very specific set of questions. These questions are basically asking the professors to elicit this anthropology. 4.5 minutes, yes? 3 minutes, you just cut it back. The four questions are an anthropological question. What is the idea of the person behind one teaches? Which leads to an epistemological question, which is, of course, valid for every science according to its object, and which determines the content of that science relative to the truth. Is what one teaches truth? Is what one teaches true? What limits are there to the science and to its method? That leads then to the ethical question. How should one act, both in the context of the specific work, scientific work, and in its technical application, as well as in the behavior of everyday life? And then the ethical question leads to the question of meaning. Is when one learns and teaches meaningful? How does it relate to human existence? And why does one pursue it? Those questions are the ones that have been used by the university in every department to be able to answer the questions of what anthropology supports the teaching of the science. That has led to a series of documents in each of the departments that answer the question. It's been really difficult because oftentimes the professors don't have the language or the background. So what we do is we pair them with a philosopher or a theologian, mostly a philosopher, because most of the problems we have with all these strange conclusions is people trying to do science and theology without philosophy. Philosophy has to provide the rigor of thinking. This is what we've been doing. We have this series of documents. But we have found that it is not quite enough. And what we're doing and what I'm doing as I visit around is we're trying to find out who has done similar work, better work, that can teach us to make it even better, and with whom we're, of course, happy to share what we have accomplished and maybe build it in a better direction. So that's what we've been doing, and that's my talk. Done yet. We are actually building a. We are trying to. I just came to the university to create the partnerships. The conversation has been internal, and these documents exist.